24 hours, the mole moved out to the mailbox. And I just went, wow, this is amazing. This is wonderful. So I honestly did not know that you could do that. I'm going to give you a book list in a little bit. And on it, if you're interested in this work at all, I highly recommend the work of Michelle Smallwright. She is utterly an angel on earth for the nature spirits, animals, all kinds of things like that. She's written a book called Behaving as if the God in All Life Mattered. And that's really just the most perfect title. That is the attitude that everything is God, everything is of God, everything is divinely inspired, has their place. We just don't understand it very many times. So, and the other thing is you can call into your yard or your space beings that you need. I happen to love mockingbirds. When we moved to the valley from Pismo Beach, I very much missed the meadowlarks and things like that. It was my favorite childhood bird, along with mockingbirds. And I just called out, if there's any in the area, please come to this yard. I will welcome you. And I had one within 24 hours. One time I was wishing that a blue jay would build a nest. I was feeling depressed, and we have this lovely pistachio tree outside our kitchen window. And, you know, I was saying, it's such a great tree. It would be so wonderful if a jay would come in and make a nest. 24 hours later, he was there. So I haven't had enough experience with this. I know it's not just me. It's not coincidence. I've had too many things that have happened that it can't be coincidence. I believe that if you recognize them as living beings with purpose like yourself and meet them on some kind of level like that, they respond in kind. They do. I just can't say that strongly enough. Let's see. Oh gosh, there's just so much here. I should mention to you, the angels, all of the nature spirits, all of the elementals, all of the different kingdoms are under the guidance and protection of an angel. And the four archangels that we're most familiar with, Raphael, Michael, Uriel, and I'm missing one, Gabriel, all are presiding over the four great elemental families of the earth. I'll mention that a little bit if I get a chance to talk about archangels. I want to tell you one other nature story, actually two, that I just love. One is from Michelle Smallwright's book. At her farm in Virginia, Paralandra is the name of that farm, she and her husband cut the trees for firewood, but they never do that without asking permission or for what they need, you know, to see if it's all right. And they were running low on firewood, and she had just received information that there was a white oak that was ready for cutting, and the nature spirits had given permission. And she said, but you know, when you cut that tree, you need to really say exactly where you want it to fall and how you want it to fall, because it's going to be close to some of their barns or something. So I said, okay, well, I could do that. And early one morning, she was awakened with a terrific crash and flew out of bed to find her husband running up the yard, I guess. And he was just kind of ashen, and she said, what happened? And he told her that he had been very specific. He'd asked the tree to fall just in this particular area, and it was falling to the right instead of to the left. And he said, I didn't know what to do. I'd asked specifically, but it was going to the right. I just yelled out, no, no, 4 feet to the left. And he said, in midair, the tree moved and fell. And so that was his first very clear demonstration of, I mean, she has incredible stories about whole fields of gophers and moles and things. She has lots of dogs and cats. And, you know, she didn't want them always to be eating them, so she told them to go a certain place, and they had to be at a certain time, they had to move. And this has happened. People have witnessed things moving. So her connection is very deep and longstanding. Now, for myself, when we lived in Atascadero, we had two oak trees in front of our home. Little did we know that the builder who built the house had piled a lot of dirt around the base of the trees, so they were basically smothering, especially one of them. We pulled the dirt away. We literally destroyed our front yard to save these two wonderful oaks, but the one was failing anyway. We brought in nursery care, everything we could think of, and finally I said, you know, I'm just going to have to release this tree. It had a big crack in it, and Bert was afraid it was going to fall. And we always had winds from the west, so that meant the tree would fall right on our driveway or if it was the northwest, it was going to come right on the house. So we had to get a permit and get the tree taken out. Well, at that time, I was in San Luis working at a center there, and I got a terrified phone call from my daughter, Kirsten, who was 8 years old at the time, to say in a terrified voice, "Mom, I got home from school, and the oak tree's laying on our roof." I'm just incredibly upset, and I usually got home just a little after she did. So she had arrived home first that day, and kept her on the phone, got my husband on the phone, and when the guys at his office heard the tree had fallen, they were all in shock because they parked in the driveway, and they all carpooled, and they knew if the tree fell, it would be a west wind that would make it fall. Well, we get home, and what we found was we had literally no damage. The tree had first, somehow, the neighbor said there was a freak, east wind, and it had blown the tree into the arms of the other oak, and then it rolled gently onto the roof of our house. All the damage we sustained was a crushed rain gutter, a cracked brick in our walkway. We had a nice curving brick walkway. I had just planted rose trees, and it missed every one of the rose trees, some of them by only as much as an inch. So it was an utterly amazing teaching and such a gift. That tree warmed us for 2 years because all the guys in the neighborhood and Bert, you know, got together and sawed it all down. Our neighbors thought our roof was destroyed. They said there was such a noise that they were sure the front end of our house was demolished. So I did a lot of gratitude for that. It was just wonderful, wonderful teaching. I'll talk just briefly about the Undines, the Sylphs, and the Salamanders, which are the old world names or the esoteric names for the water spirits, the fire spirits, and the air spirits. In this area, you have water not too far away, so there are lots of contacts that you can make. There are freshwater spirits and there are saltwater spirits. And at the saltwater level, the easiest ones to contact are the ones that play in the surf, right, or at the edges of lakes. Mainly there, I see them usually in the oceans or water that's being buffeted quite a bit right at the edges. And these beings love people. And one of the reasons you feel so good when you go to the seashore is because they are around you. If they see people that are depressed or overburdened or down in some way, they will come out of the water and try to clarify your field. They're about this tall. I've seen some about this tall. They're usually kind of bluish or greenish, kind of like their water. They love children, but they really also will come out to humans that are on the beach sunning or having a good time or sitting alone or whatever. One of my favorite experiences was when a girlfriend of mine, who has a daughter the same age as mine, taken our girls to the beach. We were having a lovely little picnic, and my daughter was probably 9, and Alina was probably 9, and they were frolicking in the water, and they turned suddenly and just hugged each other, and, you know, such good friends kind of thing. And out of the water came this lovely being, and it also put its arms around these children. And I told Anne what I was seeing, and she just started to cry, and it is very moving. We just don't know in our daily lives how much beloved activity is happening around us all the time. You just don't, you aren't aware of it. In our homes, I should have mentioned this early, every home has little house beings that help you. They help you find things. They help you organize. They help you clean. They help add an... They could do more, huh, Gail? That's what I always say, too. They help you when you're cooking. They will enhance the food. They try to bring a better energy in to nurture the people that are going to consume the food. They love parties and things like that. They love gatherings like this. I have a Christmas when I was making Santa Claus cookies with my family on my husband's side. It's a favorite of theirs, and it's a big Santa Claus face. And you decorate this face, and so I was busy doing that, and all of a sudden on the windowsill, a whole bunch of these little beings showed up, and they were all excited, use this color, use that, you know. And then they vanished, and I thought, well, that's weird, they didn't stick around very long. But when they came back, they all looked like Santa. They all had the little versions to their, as much as they could, of Santa Claus. Because they're very emotional beings, they don't have a highly developed mental body like we do. The air spirits are very mental, but They can mimic, they're great mimics, so they can hold a vision for a while of a body or something, but they really are just energy, so it's hard for them. They sometimes get the arms all wrong, or the legs, or the nose and stuff. So it's great fun, but anyway, that was a fun thing, and they usually show up at Christmas. Back to the water spirits. The mer people do exist, and they are real, and I think the old stories and legends about mermen and mermaids and all of that springs from a time when we apparently had the ability to see some of these beings. Now, when I've been out on large boats out in the deep ocean, I've never seen a mermaid that looks like, you know, the pictures that you see, the very beautiful stylized pictures. But they are very beautiful, but they don't have finished bodies. They're very, the best thing I could say is wavy, like the water that they live in. They're very changeable. And I've never seen a specific tail, but it kind of just kind of drifts away, sort of thing. So these beings are very helpful if you're a fisherman, if you're out in a storm, if you're a sailor. If you're in trouble, all you have to do is call out. I think the dolphins work quite in tandem with these people, with these beings, because there are many numerous stories of dolphin rescues, of babies, of people that are in danger from sharks, all kinds of stories. If you read any of the literature at all, you'll find that. So if you're a fisherman, and I really believe, you know, in our stories of Jesus and the other great masters in the world, when they work with nature and it seems miraculous to us, it's not so much miraculous as that they are utterly connected with all of these other kingdoms. They are not separated in consciousness or heart. So, of course, they can request, and the seas can be stilled, or the storms can be calmed, or fish can give themselves to nurture this life, you know, when it's asked for in a very loving way. American Indians, we're going to hear much more about their teachings as we go into the next century, because they really know about when you need food, going with a prayerful spirit and asking the dear people to give you their body. And what that does is bless the dear person, because we're on a higher level of evolution. So there's a whole understanding that exists between that. That's coming back. You'll be hearing much more about that. If any of you have read Joan Grant's work, she is a very visionary woman who lived, I think, in the 20s and 30s. I think her childhood was probably turn of century, early 20s. She tells a wonderful story about her archaeologist father in Egypt, when she was probably 10, 11, 12, something like that. And here they're doing this work, and a sandstorm blows up, and everything's going to be lost or destroyed. So they're all in a fit about this. And she's inside at her father's request, staying out of the storm, and finally she can't bear it anymore, and she runs out, and she just yells into the storm, "Just please, you know, calm down." This is very paraphrased. I don't remember exactly what she said. "You could have all the storm time you want some other time if you could just calm down for X number of days." And miraculously, the storm calms down. What you need to know about Joan Grant is that from the time she was a toddler, she did work out of her body at night during World War I, helping the soldiers who were being killed in the war. She didn't understand what she was doing, and she often told her parents, who really didn't have a total understanding either. But as she matured, she realized that somehow she was able to do this, and finally made peace with that, and wrote quite a lot of books and understood more as she got older. But you can imagine, your soul doesn't have age as we think of it, but when you incarnate into this baby body and you're so ready to do the work that you came in to do, you can imagine it's very difficult without that full consciousness, unless the brain is very awakened as a child. So, and that's coming, by the way. I've seen quite a lot of evidence. I have one client in particular who's got a child that's, I think he's third grade this year. He knows things very often before they happen. He can tell future, he can tell past. When he meets someone, he knows all about them, even though he's never met them. His intuition, that inner knowing level of his, is so highly developed that it's been kind of frightening to his teachers at school, and they have tested him, but he just surpasses everything. He doesn't test. So I think we're going to see more of that kind of child coming in as we have more conscious parents that are bringing conscious children, you know, to the planet. Well, let's see. The freshwater spirits are also many and varied. Any lake, stream, pond, even a swimming pool. I didn't even give that thought. We have a pool at my house. And here I am. I supposedly know these things. I didn't even think about it. And I knew the water was living, but I didn't think of an ensouling spirit living there. And one day I was kind of depressed. I was wandering around outside, walking around the pool. All of a sudden, this very beautiful being rose up out of the water and threw her arms around me. And the affection that was there for me, and I never even knew this being was present, it overwhelmed me, and I just felt so thankful. I never think of my pool now in the same way. So freshwater spirits are incredibly beautiful. You can see them easily in waterfalls, anywhere in nature, the redwood forests, in ponds, and things like that. They're everywhere. Rivers have very old and ensouling beings who move up and down their water and are very wise. So inspiration, a source of inspiration for me has always been to sit near water, whether it be salt water or fresh water. And I didn't understand that for some time, but I think often the wisdom that's held there can be shared if you open into that. Well, that's the Undines. That's the old name for them. The air spirits are very mentally developed. That's the sylphs. And that's why if you're a child or an adult, you can go lie out under the sun and there's clouds overhead, and you can imagine a certain shape forming, and they will perform that for you if they can. Always if it's in divine order, you know, with God's plan for your area or your patch of sky or whatever. But they're very aware of humanity. They let you know they're around by brushing you when you're out, little breezes that are unexpected. I have a little sheet that I'll pass out about ways of recognizing nature spirits so you can get a clue about how to realize that's really what's happening. But these spirits have worked with humanity in a good way, I think, for a very long time. And I should say, all of these families of beings were known as the good people in the ancient days, and they worked very closely with humanity. It was mankind, humanity, who pulled itself back or who blamed our problems onto that particular group of beings, and they withdrew from us. So that's really what happened there. The great storm beings are a type of sylph. Tornadoes, hurricanes, any great windstorm or rainstorm, that is the wind beings at work. And I must say that when you hear on the news, especially the weather reports about a terrible storm, you know, that's our perception. Their perception is that the work they are doing is in divine order. It is what was asked for on a divine level. Floods, typhoons, hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, always cleansing and healing. It's our perception that sees them as destructive and negative. The few times that I've been in the presence of earthquakes, there is such an incredible uprush of energy from the earth. It's a very potent feeling. I'm a grounded person now, I think, in my life for the most part, but I wasn't when I was younger. And earthquake energy really, really grounds you. It's quite amazing. So I just want to say that very strongly, these storms are not destructive. That's our perception. They know on a divine level what they've been asked to do and why. If you look at what happens when a tornado races through a city or a small town of some sort, the people generally have to come together to rebuild, to recreate. They serve one another. They are equals then, you know. So I think sometimes that happens in certain areas so that consciousness can change and shift and awaken, and maybe something better occurs than was even there before. So just a brief note about that. The salamanders, or fire spirits, are the most potent, probably, and the most highly evolved of the different families and the earth spirits. They have their homes in the places deep in the earth that are molten, in the volcanoes, in the core of the earth. They're not often seen, although Hawaii has Pele, which is the fire goddess, they call her, on that island, and she's very active in Kilauea. We have Montserrat erupting now. We had Mount St. Helens in our area, and Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines. We're going to see a lot more of that. Fire is cleansing, changing. It promotes growth and new earth. That is really what their work is about, is creating new earth. It's a powerful force, but I have to say that the other nature beings do not see fire spirits as evil or destructive at all. They see them really as stirring, as evocative of great and difficult work. Fire spirits love music, stirring, powerful music, and some of them, they say, I don't know this personally, I've heard this, work with the great musicians, especially someone like Wagner. You know, he has fire music, literally, the Ring, the Ride of the Valkyries, that kind of music. But they say that the angels and fire spirits work with musicians such as Mozart, Chopin, Handel, who wrote the Messiah in a number of hours, flat out, and at the end of that said the room was filled with angels. He was so open by that time that that's what he saw. He heard all of that and tried. He basically, I would say, was the amanuensis for the angelic realm to bring that work in, because it is so uplifting and it blows your heart open when you hear it at Christmas, especially the Hallelujah Chorus, which I understand. I have a musician friend who's done some research into his life, and she told me that Handel said the Hallelujah Chorus was literally angelically inspired, and that the word Hallelujah is an angel word, and that music was the closest he could come to this enormous outpouring of praise that he heard. So quite remarkable when you think of that. I have one story that I want to share with you that I think is utterly amazing. My husband has kind of a slight interest in what I talk about, and so he's heard me talk about some of these things before. So he's reading this novel written by the man whose book was made into the film called A River Runs Through It. Probably excellent movie about that family, autobiographical, I guess. Well, he also was quite involved in rescue work, I think, and in, I don't think he was a fireman, but some kind of volunteer fire work or something. Anyway, he springs from Montana, I think, and there was a terrific fire raging out of control, and he and his other men were in there, and they were going to get trapped. They knew it. It had backed up on them, and they couldn't get out. And he tells in this book, my husband was reading this, and he just jumped out of his chair and said, Lil, you've got to hear this. This is like the stuff you talk about. This man says that he knew he was a dead man. The fire was all around him. He was losing the ability to breathe. When suddenly a person of some sort, he didn't know what it was, black, showed up beside him. He said at first he thought it was a burned man. But he said this thing turned to him and said, stay with me. I will guide you out. You are saved, or something to that effect. And this blackened being stayed beside him and guided him through the firewall. And he lived along with many of the other men. And he had no explanation for that. But when I heard that, I said, oh my gosh, you know, that was a salamander. That's the esoteric name for them. Who knew? This man has a great heart. He loves the forest. He knew the fire was not an evil thing. And I just think those beings knew they had to save this man so he could write, continue his work and his talk about nature and how nature heals and how to preserve it and all of that. So I find that utterly remarkable. It's the only story I've ever heard about real contact with a salamander by a human being, other than when you light a flame like this, you're bringing that into creation, literally. There is a little being in every flame that ensouls it. So that's one story I love. Okay, I want to give you a little handout. Nini? Just pass that around. And we'll talk a little bit about how you as a person in just your daily life can recognize nature spirits when they're in your yard or, you know, anywhere, house, car, all over the place, but mainly when you're out in nature. So these are some little hints that'll give you clues about what's happening. And the first one, this is so common that you can't miss this one. It's when you feel something tickling your feet, your toes or ankles when you're in nature, in your garden, or there's something tiny, you feel like there's a bug in your hair, but there's no bug. You know, that's usually fairy feet that you're feeling. When my children were little, my son used to tell me, "Mom, there's something in my room and it's always brushing my face." And I would say, "Well, it's either your angel wing, you know, your guardian angel's wing, or it's one of the little house spirits letting you know that it's having fun with you and your music," something like that. That's the most common. I hear that all the time. When I teach a class, which is like an all-day thing out in nature, usually I have many people that will say that they felt that and didn't know what it was that day. When you see leaves begin to flutter or whisper and there's no breeze of any kind anywhere, but these suddenly start dancing about, that's one of the sylphs trying to get your attention. When there's no wind, but suddenly a breeze blows around you, ruffling your hair, blowing your hat off, or making leaves dance. I've had this many times. I like to keep my patio clean, so I'm sweeping up those leaves, and I've just about got them ready, and, you know, here comes a little sylph, and they're all over the place. And that used to irritate me, but I just have to laugh. I think they're just trying to get me to lighten up and, you know, have fun rather than be so perfect or whatever. Okay, when a whirlwind or a dust devil is absolute evidence of a sylph in action. They're just right there. When you're near water and it's not moving, but it begins to ruffle or flutter where you are, you know, there's no fish there, there's no wind, that kind of thing. When time seems to disappear, that's a real evidence of the presence of the fairy realm. For me, I've had time expand. I've gone from San Luis Obispo to my home in Clovis, which usually takes almost 3 hours in 2 hours, which basically that isn't possible when you're driving 65, even 70, you know, because there are many big trucks on that route that you get stuck behind. But time shifts, you know, you can expand it or contract it, or it just disappears. 5 minutes will feel like you've been there for an hour or something. So be aware of that. And I've mentioned this, when something disappears or reappears or gets rearranged. Oh, gosh, I have to tell you one quick story. This just happened to me about a month ago. I was sitting at my kitchen table working on a class of some sort, looking out at my garden, and I suddenly got a message that I needed to read a passage from Carolyn Mace's book, which, by the way, I highly recommend, Anatomy of the Spirit, if you're interested in healing work. So I said, okay, I can do that. I think that book's in my healing room. So I got up to get it. It wasn't there. And I thought, okay, well, it's in my bedroom. Maybe I read it last night. And it wasn't there. Okay, maybe it's in the family room. It wasn't there. I finally said, well, look, I got to get back to work here. If you want me to read this, you're going to have to show me where the book is. I walk back to the kitchen where I was sitting, and there on my papers is the book. I just went, wow. And I heard a lot of laughter, you know, but I mean, I went, okay. Why didn't you just appear it in the, maybe I'd be too frightened if it just suddenly showed up in front of me. I don't know. I still have that residual probably. But that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. But it can also be something so small as just a flower being moved or a small item in your home, a pencil or something like that. When you're out in nature and birds or butterflies or other creatures approach you unafraid, this is an absolute sign that, you know, you are in touch with that whole kingdom. My husband and I once took a river picnic to Yosemite. Lots of water. We couldn't really get in the water, but we could get close. So we sat on the sandy beach, and this little wild bird showed up. I didn't know what it was. It wasn't a finch or anything, but it was a beautiful little bird, and it sat on my shoe. It just flew in and landed on my foot. My husband was so surprised, but he was just enchanted like I was. Here was this wonderful bird. So I said, well, how about if we share our picnic and, you know, we have some extra bread, we'll just... He said, oh, you'll scare it away. And I said, I don't think so. So we took out grapes and it ate everything. And then after a little while, it flew away and I thought, oh, it was here, now it's gone. And so we were eating. Pretty soon it shows up again with its lady friend and all their babies. It was utterly charming. The babies, however, having been reared by great parents, were up in the tree and were not coming down. So the two parents were down here calling and calling, and eventually the babies came. But that was so touching. And needless to say, we had other animals that showed up too. I think we had coons and squirrels. And it was just, it was a magical picnic. It really was. I have jays in my backyard that really trust me, and they've reared a couple of families. And if you like nature at all, these kinds of things are not out of the realm of possibility for you. You just have to have patience and stillness and a lot of love from that open-heartedness. Let's see. Oh, some of the best times to contact these beings are dawn, dusk, noon, and midnight. I can't speak for noon so much, but dawn, dusk, and midnight are really great. They really are. Dusk has always been my favorite time since I was a child, and it's just a magical time, especially when there's a full moon out. It's a beautiful time. We have the autumnal equinox approaching, which is either Monday or Tuesday of this week.